in it.
I don't think we ever do that, but this one especially because of the pension issue that we're making.
Fine with me, boy.
Okay.
Right in front of John. John, you can do all the talking.
Okay, good.
Perfect. Okay, so we're going to look at the minutes to start this meeting from the prior meeting. We've got, I'm assuming that the correction is, it goes from Mr. Wright to Mr. Trout down near the bottom?
Yes.
Okay, and that's all I saw in there. But the only corrections I saw as well, so. John, Mr. Baker, do you want a minute to read those? Or?
No, I've read them.
Okay. Did you have any corrections or anything?
No, I'm ready here.
Well, I move to accept.
A second.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none.
Good.
Okay. So it looks like for the agenda today, we've got Mr. Trout and his traveling road show and update. Wendy, and I think everybody's got an opportunity to meet Wendy Fuller. And then we've got the pension plan issue.
I got a note that was sent to the council yesterday from city manager that was going to be brought up today because it's an issue that the council's going to have to be dealing with as far as a change in the pension. I have no idea what's going on, but I thought Dave would be here, but apparently Linda's going to be providing that update as well.
So okay, good.
I'm here to listen like you guys are today.
Okay. So. Okay. Should we start with Rick Trout the way we usually do and get the update on that and then go into the pension plan?
Whatever
does that
works.
Work?
Whatever works. Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. Rick,
okay.
Get on.
Well, how much time do we have?
Well, we've got an hour. How long is the pension plan discussion going to?
It should just be 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Okay.
Time. I have to be someplace Tuesday, so.
Okay, so I think we're fine. I probably need to be somewhere tonight about 5:30, but
okay.
I think we're fine.
We had a good quarter. If you recall the last meeting, the third quarter was extremely difficult. We were not alone in that. Literally every professional money manager was very challenged during the third quarter. Just to give you a flavor of how difficult it was to capture what was happening in the market, the index of all hedge funds, the hedge fund managers are supposed to be the smart guys, when they were down 5% for the year as a group. My favorite is there's a fellow named Bruce Berkowitz who has a long history as a manager. He's a very, very good manager. In 2010, Morningstar named him Manager of the Year. And in 2011, he was down 23%. And the problem was that the volatility in Europe around the credit crisis there caused literally every asset class to begin to converge. In other words, diversification was not as effective a tool as it would be in a more normal environment. And we began to be driven totally by headlines. And if you recall, I said in October that if Merkel and Sarkozy were smiling, the market was up, and if they're frowning, the market's down. And coupled with that tendency to be tied to political events was a general movement away from the euro and a number of other weaker currencies and into the dollar. And so any asset class that had the slightest correlation to the dollar went down because the dollar got stronger. So if you're paying $100 for a barrel of oil and the dollar gets 10% stronger, then all of a sudden that barrel of oil is only $90. And that translates to revenue at the pump, so all the energy stocks crashed during the quarter. And if you recall further from October, I was talking about how we have three principal calls in our asset allocation strategy. One is that treasury debt will get weaker. Second is that energy will become scarce and more expensive. And third, that the emerging nations will lead the globe in growth. And all three of those went against us in the third quarter. In the fourth quarter, they all went for us. And we turned around and had a really good quarter. But that's, it's not exactly how you want to get your good quarters. You don't want to do it on extreme volatility like that. As the quarter and the calendar year came to a close, the European situation seemed to sort of go back on the back burner a little bit. There was a sense that the leadership would get together and figure out something. And with the absence of news in Europe, the market went up. And so we had we finished the year at 1257 on the S&P. The first 5 weeks of the year, we went up 100 points on the S&P, and we did it essentially not because the U.S. economy turned around, but because there's no bad news from Europe. Mm-hmm. Now we're once again in a position where Europe is getting back to the front page again. Greece has a bond maturity next month, and they don't have the money to pay it. And so the discussion has been among the Troika, the IMF, the World Bank, and the ECB, and the various governments in the EU to come up with an arrangement in which those countries will commit to funding this next bond payment. And the condition has been that at some point, that by 2020, Greece will get its debt down to 120% of their GDP from about 200% now. And, they keep saying, yeah, we're good for it. If you've there's very few debtors that will tell you they're not going to pay you. they're always going to tell you they're good for it. And the Germans...
I can vouch for that.
And so now...
Don't look at me.
It's Tim and I joke about this as being bankers, but when the guy comes in for the 10th renewal, you begin to suspect that he's probably not good for it. So where we're at now in that is that the Greek Parliament has agreed in principle to fulfill all the demands that the various nations have made, but it now appears that very quietly in the background, the Germans and the Finns and the Dutch don't really want to do this. And they're adding additional stipulations that the Greeks probably can't meet. And the suggestion is that the Germans, that group led by the Germans, actually wants Greece to default. And they think that they can work their way out of it. There's a lot of uncertainty about that. And you saw yesterday, as a small example of what has been happening, that group led by the Germans postponed a meeting. And there's some suggestion that they might not meet again until next week. At some point, you can't meet that March 20th deadline if you wait too long. And so what immediately happened is the volatility went up in the market, the Dow went down 100. And so it won't take much for that to get back in the headline, and then we'll once again be...
Well, and meanwhile, you got riots and, and riots burning and
Athens.
I mean, just some chaos going on with the Greek citizens.
What the Germans have said is that they don't want to pay any more money until after the elections in Greece, and they want the new government in Greece to be the one that commits to this, because their fear is this interim government will make the commitment. They have the election, somebody else comes in, and it's a new game again. Which is what's been happening over and over again.
I don't know if I know it has to do with when you see riots, you say, well, the country isn't willing to take the austerity measures. On the other hand, the people out in the streets rioting may not be the majority of thought that's in Greece, and I just kind of wonder if there's any kind of data that you have, or if they've done any kind of feeling about where the majority of the Greek population is on austerity.
Most of them are against it. The reality is that Greece can't do this. A third of the workforce works for the government, and most of the people don't pay taxes. So unemployment among young people is at 50%.
Wow.
Their overall unemployment rate is around 20. And they can't.
Their economy just isn't in a position to support anything, really.
It can't be done.
But they've had entitlement. I mean, they've had tremendous entitlements, it appears. And to give those up, you know what that is.
A lot of people try to put the blame entirely on Greece, and I think that's inappropriate. The real blame is, or the real problem is the structure of the EU itself, because you have a monetary union without any central fiscal authority. And as long as you have that, it doesn't matter how many bailouts you have or anything else. The more productive countries are going to be taking wealth away from the less productive countries, and that's always going to be Greece, and it's always going to be the Mediterranean states. And over time, the less productive countries will become debtor nations, and the more productive countries will be creditor nations. And as long as you have each economy functioning separately, it doesn't matter whether they've got the same currency or not. That's what you're going to have.
Yeah.
And so it's a fundamental problem with the EU itself, and not necessarily the Greeks. So, not that I'm advocating for the Greeks, but it's not entirely their fault. The Greek default itself, of course, is not the issue, and I think we've talked about that before. The real problem is the banks that own the bonds. And I think a lot of this footwork that's been going on for the last 2 years, in large part, has been an effort to try to give the banks enough time to clean up their balance sheets and get ready for what's going to come, because it's going to come, and it's not going to be any fun. And the challenge, and the reason that we melt down every time that hits the front page is that it's unclear exactly what the impact will be on the U.S. economy. So if you begin to, and I'll talk about our forecasts in that context. So we think that GDP will be about 2% this year, and most other, we're in the mainstream there. And so the economy, our economy, is not growing fast enough to substantially bring down the unemployment rate. It needs to be more than 2.5 to do that. And at 2, it's fairly fragile. So you look at when we already have some fiscal headwinds built into that, that are baked into the economy over the next year, that are going to challenge that 2%. One is the payroll tax holiday. It looks like that's going to get reenacted. Right. So we'll probably be okay there. The second one is tax rates are going to go up at the end of the year. The Bush tax cuts will expire. And the third is that the automatic cuts that will go into effect as a result of the super committee's failure to reach an agreement, those are going to go into effect at the end of this year. So you put all those three things together, the payroll tax may go away, but you put all three of those things together, and you have about $500 billion of GDP that will disappear. So that's going to come off of that 2%. You look at the S&P 500, anywhere from 15 to 25% of the S&P 500's revenue comes from Europe. Europe is in recession now, and it will probably get worse before it gets better. So how much of that 15 to 25% of S&P 500 revenue is going to go away? That's an unknown. So we could, because of Greece, begin to slip down under 1% GDP by the end of the year. And if it's really negative, it could. If it's really bad, it could go negative. Compounding that is, I think, the relative certainty that gas prices are going to go up. And that's going to detract from GDP because most of that money goes overseas in the form of oil purchases. And then you have the basic uncertainty around the economy right now. Now, all of those things considered, if all of those things go right, I think the base case is for a slow recovery this year. We've seen jobless claims coming down. They were 348 this morning. First time they've been under 350 in 4 years.
Wow.
We've seen the supply manufacturers indices are doing well. They're continuing to be above 50, which is which indicates expansion. Balance sheets among the largest companies are very strong. They have a lot of cash to handle any kind of difficulty. And the Fed is continuing to pledge that they're going to be extremely accommodative. And in fact, they may actually begin to talk about doing another round of quantitative easing before the end of the year if Europe blows up.
A quick question on the gas prices. You think they're going to go up just because of the cyclical nature of the summer coming, or do you believe because of some of the issues in the Middle East that is just going to surface, or well, is there something else?
It's a combination of both. I grew up in a refinery town in Texas, so in the summer, in the summertime, they move toward blends that use more gas and more expensive gas.
Okay, that's fine. Okay,
but then you compound that with the tension around Iran, and you get high gas prices.
And I guess a quick question is, if the tension does get greater, for instance, Iran, the Israel, that whole thing, and it really becomes something serious, that could just affect everything we're just talking about right now. I mean, that could actually be a really, that would really
if
they, be
if the Straits of Hormuz are closed, we could have $150, $200 oil next week.
For barrel.
So that's, I mean, that's not an issue right now. That's in front of us, like Greece and the other things. But if that does happen, or if something like that happens, that could really
all bets are off. Yeah. We will have a recession if that happens.
Okay.
So you look at, you know, the U.S. Things are modestly okay. Earnings are good. The S&P 500. Estimates at the beginning of the year were $105 a share. Now then you say, okay, where do I, if 15% to 25% of my revenue is coming from Europe, how sound is that $105 estimate? You know, it's you begin to question whether you can really do that. So if we dodge a bullet in Europe, and if there's no significant disruption in energy supplies, then I think that the market, the direction of the market is generally up from here.
Even with all the things happening domestically, like the tax raise and everything else, that's not going to have a real significant
impact. We could probably, that's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a headwind, but it won't, I don't think it would throw us into a recession.
Okay.
Like a catastrophe in Europe could. Or,
okay.
Or now, on the negative side, we still have significant delevering in the economy. If you look at the chart on the very first page of the package, you see there in the lower right-hand corner that debt as a percentage of GDP has declined significantly. Now that's all private debt. Public debt has, of course, gone up, but the decline is actually understated. But that reflects a general reluctance of consumers to borrow, to borrow and spend, and also businesses to expand. You can talk to any banker in the Northwest right now, and he will tell you that he's got money to lend and can't find anybody willing to borrow it.
And demand is very weak.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of cash on the sidelines.
So if there's no borrowing, there's no expansion, there's no new payroll, and on down the line. The European situation is going to continue to feed volatility. Unemployment is getting better, but it depends on how you figure it. The participation rate, that is the number of people who are who consider themselves to be in the pool of available employees, is worse than it's been in years. And so while the nominal employment unemployment rate is changing, it doesn't reflect the actual number of people who could work if they had the opportunity. That number is still up in the high teens. The U6 rate, it's staying up around 15% and just won't come off. Real estate, we know about that. That's another obstacle to recovery. And then finally, growth expectations. The expectations for growth are declining. The prediction for the International Monetary Fund is that we're going to do about 2%. And both the IMF and the World Bank have actually reduced those expectations over the last few weeks. So they see a general slowdown in growth, not only here, but globally. So I think what it all adds up to is that we're not there yet. We're going to continue to have volatility more or less at the drop of a hat, and that we need to be positioned against that. Now, our response in the portfolios to that forecast has been that during the quarter, at the end of December actually, we trimmed back the equity exposure just a little, and we expanded our position in utilities and staples, consumer staples. Those are stocks that do very well in a challenged economy. It's peanut butter, Clorox, stuff like that. And then utilities, which have a very high current payout, plus they don't have global markets. Both of those have done well for us. Now, they underperformed during January because it was a risk-on situation. Europe was on the back burner, so what you saw were the cyclical stocks were doing a lot better.
Bless you, dude.
And some of the industrials did very well. But as soon as we get a little volatility, those things sell off again, and then the utilities come back. So we're still in a very fragile situation, so we're opting for current income and lower volatility in the equity portfolio right now. So that's the sort of a quick narrative on the quarter and a taste of the forecast. We'll look at the defined contribution plan first. You see there that we did, see it on page 3 of 6 in the 3-month column, we did 8.21 for the quarter, and 7.5 was the number for the benchmark, so we're ahead of the benchmark. You see there year to date, and then that's since July 1st for the fiscal year. You can see that the third quarter was not very good there, but we got it. We got all of that back in the calendar fourth quarter. Going back up to page 2 now, we'll just go through the various asset classes. First of all, in the bonds, that represents 41% of the portfolio. We did 117 for the quarter, and 112 was the benchmark return. And year-to-date, 248 against 498. Now, the reason for the trail there is go back to our treasury call. Mm-hmm. We have very little or no exposure to treasury debt in the portfolio because we believe that over the longer term, sooner or later, treasury debt is going to begin to deteriorate. And while we may trail over a very short period of time, we just can't come up with a rationale to own it for the longer term.
Right.
In the high yield portfolio, we did 865 for the quarter, and the benchmark did 581. We trailed a little year to date. Now what you see there is the second thing I was telling you about all asset classes converging during that volatility. So even though you wouldn't expect bonds to lose value in a crisis, if you have an extreme crisis like we had in the third quarter, everything will converge and even corporate bonds will go down.
But that one's not trailing year to date, is it? That one's ahead because it's lost less than what the asset class has.
Right.
Am I looking at that?
Yeah, no, but okay. It was still down.
Yeah.
It was still
down. Right,
you
right,
wouldn't
right.
expect it to be down, but it yeah. was ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And the two large cap funds, growth and value, the growth fund did 992 and the value fund did 1228. And what you see there is a trend that began to emerge in the second half of last year. We've been in a little bit of a growth market for the last 3 or 4 years as the economy bounced out of the 2009 bottom. You began to see people buying more and more stocks with higher valuations and no dividends. But as we got into this crisis in the third quarter, people migrated away from those more volatile stocks and into the value sector where they get more dividends and better valuations. The mid-cap fund, we had a good quarter there. We did 13%. In the quarter, and the S&P did 1182. So they did, all three of those asset classes did well for the quarter. They trailed for the year, 7, 5, and 3, because of the issue with the volatility. When you have an extremely volatile market like we had, all stocks begin to correlate directly to the index. And if you're doing fundamental analysis, you can be the greatest stock picker in the world. But if the bad stocks all go down exactly the same as the good stocks, and they go up exactly the same as the good stocks, then your analysis begins to lose its effectiveness in an extremely volatile market. So that was a short-term phenomenon that we saw. We saw during the quarter that I think will, as things begin to level out, I think that will not be an issue. Down on the second page, in utilities, you see we did 811 for the quarter, and since August when we added this to the portfolio, we've done 1284, and the benchmark did 635. The energy position came back in a big way. We did 18% in energy in the fourth quarter. If you recall, that was the second worst performer in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And it's negative since July 1st. But the case for energy, I think, remains intact. I can't see a scenario in which energy becomes cheaper over the next 5 to 10 years. So we believe it's appropriate to be overweighted there. In staples, again, that's Clorox, peanut butter, and jelly, and so forth. 1054 there in the quarter versus 1182, and 1135 since we added it in August versus 635. And you can see both the utilities and the staples underperformed in the fourth quarter, because that was a risk-on environment in the fourth quarter, and these are risk-off holdings. So over a shorter term, if the market's up, these may trail. If the market's challenged, they're going to do well. And then finally, emerging equities. We took a little bit off the table in emerging equities. We believe in that holding for the long term, but over the shorter term, Europe is the largest trading partner for the emerging nations. And if Europe is in a recession, then they're probably going to feel it worse than we are. And so while we believe in it over the long haul, we decided to take a little money away from that and add it to utilities during the quarter.
So the turnaround in the last 3 months basically is, like you said, not a lot of volatility in terms of what was going on in Europe. It was kind of quiet and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. It was all about the headlines. Mm-hmm. And I have told people for years that politics doesn't matter in the market because politicians typically have a highly inflated view of themselves and they think that they can influence things beyond what they really do. But in the last year, it has been the case that politics does matter.
Within a number of different markets.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's an unusual situation. So, NAN 70 for the quarter since July 1st down, but I think, again, over the long haul, we have a lot of confidence in that position. The emerging nations as a group are expected to have GDP in the 7% range over the next 5 to 10 years, where we're expected to do about 2. So, they're going to grow much faster than we are. They're going to be more volatile. So, you don't want to throw a whole lot of money in there, but you have to have exposure to it, I think.
On the politics, it seems to me like there's two issues. When you talk about politics, I guess we're talking about some of the theories on Congress, but the policies that the politicians put in place can have long-term effects. So I guess what you're talking about is not the policies, it's the political fear that's going on. There's a difference.
Policy makes a difference over the long
term.
But if you're talking about what's going to happen to the market this year, it's largely
okay, and I'm okay. I guess
earnings
a difference to me.
Policies,
those are long term effects. The politics stuff is all that short term variable stuff.
Yeah, what ultimately matters in the stock market, and that's really what we're talking about here. The thing that really makes the stock market go over the long run is earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
I think you, John, thanks.
Policies and laws and regulations do have an impact on earnings, but it's more of a long-term phenomenon than a short-term phenomenon.
Okay.
So, 821 for the quarter. Mm-hmm. In terms of dollars, the plan was up $273,000 for the fourth quarter, and ended at $3,518,718. Very quickly on the last page of this section, we have the January results, which I'll just run past you really quickly. Domestic, and this is this spreadsheet right here.
Okay.
Domestic equities trailed a little in January, and that's because of the staples and utilities position. January was a risk-on month, and so we have when you essentially set up insurance against risk, then you're going to trail if the market takes off. We think that's a very short-term situation. The emerging piece in the portfolio did very well, did 1078 for the month, so that's turning around, and we were up 2.78% for the fourth calendar quarter. So turning to the next tab on the DB plan.
We don't have a value on here, a dollar value, right?
Yeah.
From the end of January?
Actually,
I see some.
As of As of the 14th, the DC plan was $3,573,411.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's at tab 3.
Okay.
If you want to look at that.
All right.
So, and I think we've paid some, we made a distribution out of the DC plan during the month of January, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 1st of January.
So, yeah. And I don't remember how much that was.
$97,000. It was an IRA distribution.
Right. So we distributed another $97,000 out of it during the month. So we're up net of the distribution. So in the DB plan, we're at
after tab 1.
Tab 1.
Yep.
And on page 7, where we have the chart, we'll see on a consolidated basis, had another good month.
John, we're after tab 1, page 7 of 15.
Okay, thanks.
Look for the pretty graph.
For the,
got it.
for the calendar fourth quarter, the DB plan was up 7.06% versus 661 for the benchmark. And in dollar terms, all in, it was up $230,677. So a positive month there as well, and all three accounts combined in the DB plan, we were at $3,678,821 for the end of the year.
I know you went over this a while back, but how are you looking at as far as the risk analysis, the defined benefit plan versus defined contribution? I know you have a little different perspective on both. I just feel generally how you approach both of those. As far as how your investment strategy, as far as the risk analysis?
Well, the DC plan is in one pool and has unscheduled withdrawal requirements. Mm-hmm. And so we take a very basic balanced approach to that, which has a target of 60% equities and 40%. Fixed income. Now we're underweight bonds right now, or underweight equity right now, but the long-term target is 60%.
Which, Dave, that's actually recorded in the IPS, which I have a copy of,
okay.
And I
policy
can
studies.
Email that back to you if you want it.
40% fixed income.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
The DB plan is fundamentally different,
right?
In that it has legally required scheduled payments that have to go out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the approach that we presented to you and that you adopted in your policy statement is that you wanted to take as little risk as you possibly could on the liabilities that were immediately due. I think on a four-year target.
Mm-hmm.
And that with the remaining amounts of the portfolio, you could afford to be more aggressive. In other words, you're investing beyond the market cycle,
right,
on a large piece, right, of the portfolio, but okay, you're insulating yourself from the market cycle on the shorter term, okay, liabilities.
Got it. Okay.
And that's an approach that is adopted by the very largest pension plans. Now the very largest plans go much further out. They may have 20 years of liabilities, but we couldn't afford to do that here because there's an additional need to try to grow the portfolio over time.
Right.
Okay. And we didn't know in 2007 what was coming.
Right.
We adopted that, but...
But it was a good thing we did.
Yeah.
That's good.
Thanks. So, now the original approach was that we would buy zero coupon treasuries to fund those short-term liabilities.
In four different buckets, yeah.
When Treasury rates went to zero, that didn't make sense anymore, so we've tried to put it into very low-risk instruments that have some yield to pay you something while you hold it.
Right.
But the idea is that you don't want to have to worry about where the next year's payments are coming from. So,
well, yeah, we don't want to be dependent on the market.
Yeah. You don't want to have to withdraw to a down market.
Right.
So, 706, if you turn to tab 2, you see the capital growth portfolio. The capital growth portfolio has a much more aggressive asset allocation than the DC plan does. We're on tab 2, and we're on page 2 and 3 of 6.
Okay, got it.
Okay. There you go. Now, the same assets, but a different asset allocation, if you will. And for the quarter, we did 10.38 in this portfolio versus 9.67 on the benchmark. 5.91 for cents for the fiscal year to date, which starts on July 1st. If you look at this portfolio on a calendar year basis, it was for the calendar year 2011, it was down 1.21%. So we got back a good piece of what we lost in the third quarter, and I think that the trend, barring some kind of extreme event in Europe, will probably continue to be positive. In dollar terms, the portfolio was up $228,624 during the quarter. And then turning to the last page of the section, in the month of January, the portfolio was up 3.77%, with the benchmark being up 3.76%. So we held our own.
Yeah, we bested it by
smoked it, didn't we?
Yeah, one big old basis.
I didn't want to go overboard on that.
Yeah. Better than going the other way.
It is. It's better than going the other way. You're right on.
Yeah, you, as I was saying earlier, it's been a challenge this year. So if you can find anything to
break it out. Yeah, oh, yeah. You bet. You bet.
You know, it's amazing. You look at the list of really, really good money managers that had horrible years last year. You know, one of the oldest and most respected money management firms in the world is Dodge & Cox, and their balanced fund was down 2% last year. You know, our balanced portfolio was up about 0.5%. Am I 2.5% smarter than Dodge & Cox? No. You know, you never knew from one day to the next whether you were going to get hammered or not. So, then turning to the next tab on the benchmark account, of course, this one is very low volatility. Very, very short duration. We don't want credit risk, and we don't want rate risk.
David, do you understand what benchmark means and the aggressive means? Just taking that DB plan and each individual parts, the benchmark is the liquidity piece that we put into place. Mm-hmm. The aggressive is the remainder.
Right.
That stays longer in the market.
I was just thinking about his comment. I was going to ask him, so there's really no certainty in your business.
Yeah, the only
you certainty. You live with uncertainty.
The only certainty is that it's highly uncertain.
Yes. We're talking about this, not life itself. Is that right?
Right.
No, that too, but now add on what he's doing as a profession, it makes it even worse.
Yeah, that goes with the only constant is change.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd like your remarks about. You weren't 2.5% smarter than the guy. Said, you just made one guess, he made another, and you were right that day.
You know, it's and to the point, to the extreme.
That's interesting. That educated guess, I should say.
There was an interesting.
That sounds better.
Well, but you know, there's about 5 educated guesses. I guess you could probably make, and one's probably no better than the other. You only know after the fact whether it was the right one or not.
There were a lot of hedge funds. At the end of the third quarter, just simply went to cash and said, you know what, we're out, we're just going to wait until next year.
they wanted to bring their blood pressure down for a while. Yeah,
they just simply went to cash. And some closed, refunded all of their investment.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
The environment was, that was remarkable. And you can still, it's like anything else. I mean, I can find you 10 guys who say it's going to go up, and I can find you 10 guys who say it's going to go down. But ultimately, I think, are any of us golfers?
Very poor ones.
I'm better than he is.
Yeah. No. If you're looking down the fairway.
Just kidding.
That's a big group.
Yeah.
And you've got a bunker down on the left side of the fairway. You're not going to aim in the middle of the fairway. You're going to aim over the bunker, and you're going to try to bring it back so that if you err, you're going to err on the side that is not a disaster. Mm-hmm. You try to err away from your disasters. Golf is a game of misses. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben Hogan's lifetime dream was that he had 17 holes in one, and he missed the putt on the 18th hole. He said that was what he dreamed all the time. And so it's not about who is the best shot, it's about who misses the least. And I think we're kind of in an environment where we want to be the ones who miss the least and try to get a forecast that makes sense, that does not expose the portfolio to extreme risk, and then watch it very carefully.
I have to be someplace at, I have to leave here at 11:15, and I wonder, given how long this might be, if it's disjointed, if I listen to what David has to say about the pension plan and then come back to this.
Oh, are you? I'm actually done with the meat of it. We have a couple of details here that you wanted me to follow up on.
Okay, good.
No, Linda was going to, I only got to know that we were all going to get an update. And then the council was going to get an update at the next meeting. So I'm actually here to listen like you guys right now.
Okay. But I just really enjoyed this a lot. It's just fine.
Let's go ahead and finish this up and we'll
that's fine. I think we got plenty of time.
So at the last meeting, I think it was Mike that asked me to do a review of your fees for you.
Oh, good.
Okay. And so at tab 5, now, you see the actual cost. On the next page, I've included a copy of the fee schedule, which is tiered and is a little bit difficult to understand, but essentially, we've got all of your accounts tied together for calculation of fees, and so you go through all of the different tiers, and your total expense in the plan is 54 basis points.
Okay.
Now, there is mutual fund expense, but your performance is net of that expense and it's net of these fees. So your numbers that we've reviewed here are all in. And just to touch on the fees very briefly, we pay a lot of attention to mutual fund expenses because that comes out of your pocket. The Morningstar average for all mutual funds is about 1.2%. And your portfolio, using our moderate portfolio as an example, is 48 basis points. So we're less than half of the Morningstar average on internal expense, and 54.
So 48 plus the fee, so we've got the 48 for the mutual fund, and then on top of that, it's your
fee. The advisory.
So altogether, the fees the city's paying, whether it's to you or the mutual fund, is about
1.02.
Okay.
If you look around, is cheap.
Yeah, well,
Yes. Morningstar average again was how much, Rick?
0.520.
120.
And we're paying, I'm sorry,
48.
But plus the 0.54, we're at 1.02. Right. And if someone was just to go right to mutual funds and just do it that way, it'd be 1.2.
Right.
So we're a little bit less, even using the management fee schedule.
Yeah, right.
And that's one of our goals, is always to be sure that we're squeezing as much as we possibly can. And it goes to you. We don't collect any trailers. Our entire compensation is at 54 basis points. Mm-hmm. That is frequently a murky issue with some platforms. You're not exactly sure who's paying who, but we have a lot of clarity in our approach, I think. Very quickly, all of the funds are within their mandates. We don't have any changes that we're planning. I included Morningstar pages for your review. If you have any questions about any of them, you want to talk about it, you got my number, just give me a buzz.
Well, Rick, Mike's not here, but I can't remember on your fees, nothing. I think it's fair, but did we sign a contract for a set period of time and set fees, or is that annually?
We have a we haven't changed our fee schedule.
Okay.
I'm not sure that our engagement includes a specific agreement on fees. We'd be happy to do that with you if you want to. If we ever decide that we need to raise fees, we'll certainly come in and talk to you about it and do whatever makes sense for you.
Well, I appreciate your information, your insights, somewhat your humor. but anyway, I think we're being well served. I just wanted to say that.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
This is an important relationship for us.
Yeah, same here.
The Coast is one of the key pieces of West Coast Bank's business, and we were born here. Mm-hmm. And even though our office is in Portland, Newport is a big deal for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I learned a lot, not just about the pension plan, but right. just about world economies when I
yeah.
So I'm actually here just to kind of get your take on what's happening around the world. I like it.
Yeah,
I mean, it really is.
I'm highly qualified to be wrong.
It's good knowledge just to get your
at a meeting last Friday over in the Valley, and there was a fellow there. We had people in from the wine industry, and there was a fellow who's a very well-known consultant who was talking to all these vineyards and winemakers at our meeting, and he said he was talking about how you need to question your assumptions and all of that, and one of his bullets was, you don't actually believe your own BS, do you?
I would just have one little suggestion for you, and that is, if you're trying to get a new client, I wouldn't tell them the story about Ben Hogan's dream. That might kind of go against you a little bit. But
if you start believing your own stuff, then you're in real trouble.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we have three people on the team.
That's right.
You got to have that check and balance there.
Yeah. Where is that other person on the team? Is he back holding down the fort?
Well, Tim left us.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
Wendy is.
Because I was missing October.
Yeah. So Wendy's a lot easier to look at than Tim, and she's more fun to ride around with. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope he left for a good reason.
Tim is working for Fidelity now. He's doing $25 million pension plans with Fidelity.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is something he's always wanted to do.
Yeah,
so he got an opportunity
good.
To do what
that's
he wanted
great.
To do.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
good man. That's good.
Appreciate all he did for us, but we're glad
I'm glad Wendy's
kind of going after his dream, too.
That is. So. I actually brought some material because there are a lot of legislative changes and regulatory things that are going on, primarily more on the D.C. side, but thought you might be of interest. Yeah. This is also available on the Department of Labor's website.
This is not an ERISA plan.
So,
but there are some principles that
the money purchase,
paid to,
correct.
Some needs to be paid to.
And then, kind of, Rick touched on this, but part of our management watch is to kind of also balance out the liabilities. And so, as part of while we are not your administrator and we don't do your mortality check either, your mortality audit, what you did provide, and Linda, I emailed this to you. With our current distributions for monthly pensioners, so that you can sort of do a double checks and balance to make sure that we're not overpaying on somebody who's we've not been notified has passed away.
So this is
always a good thing to audit as frequently as possible, and I can generate these as frequently as quarterly if that's how frequently you are doing your mortality audit.
We only get it once a year, and usually it's like November or December after the fiscal year in which it's supposed to be calculated.
This is a little different. It's showing who's receiving
payments.
Correct.
I see.
And you might want to be sure and check on that too. Okay. We have a plan, a large plan up in Lincoln City, and we had a beneficiary who died, and the family went about a year without telling anybody about it. And so, you know, the plan's going to take a loss on that.
I was looking at the names and some of the people, I'm going, no, I don't know what's going on.
And we don't have any way to verify that for you, so you need to kind of be
I can send you the link for the Social Security website that actually allows you to plug in their numbers and identify if they're still.
That's good.
So I'll send you that link just for your own audit purposes. And then, Linda, I did email this to you, but this is for the record for this meeting. And
so that
this disbursement's as of January of last year through January of this year.
So that just kind of fills in what the outgoing payments are.
Yes.
That kind of fills in what we get as an annual report from our plan administrator.
Yes. Who is your administrator?
We have two. We have AKT, which does our defined contribution, and the standard that does.
Oh, that's right.
The DB.
Good.
All right.
Okay. And that's my report.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Okay, Linda, you're on.
I'm on. The city, I don't know if you guys have been aware of this, but this city management has been talking for probably about a year, maybe a little longer than a year, about possibly doing away with the defined benefit portion of the plan, because honestly, it's, as you know, we're in we have a high unfunded liability, and as time's going on, it's really a plan that's dying, dying out there in the job market. Most places, and I think you guys will tell us this too, does not have a defined contribution and defined benefit plan.
You don't see any new ones opening at all.
Not defined benefit.
No.
And they've been out of the public sector for 20 years now or so.
So as of probably next Monday or Tuesday in council, that they're going to give council a resolution which states that they would like to do a soft freeze on the present defined benefit. And then also at that time, they'll probably start a new defined contribution plan for any additional new employees that start working as of July 1, 2012.
Linda, let's just for clarity, who is this affecting? Because there are some PERS folks, so can you just for the record clarify who will this be affecting as far as the employees and which unions, if any?
This, of course, it won't affect the people on PERS, which
who
is
are?
Our fire and our sworn officers on the police.
Okay.
The people who it will affect us, the non-union employees, the Newport Employee Association, which is primarily the Public Works Department, and also a few employees in the Police Association, Newport Police Association, the non-sworn officers, which is our community service officer and our recorders. A soft freeze, it will allow anyone in the plan to stay in the plan. They will continue on getting the benefit until at their point of retirement at 62. So that's great news for us who is still on the plan. Anyone that is hired and they're looking at July 1st, 2012 to make this official, anyone hired after that date, they would bring in on a defined contribution, and right now we pay 6% to the employee toward the employee's salary. They're probably talking 9 to 10%. They haven't worked that exactly out yet. As for the unions do have to sign off on this. And we got a notice from the attorney this morning saying that if for whatever reason, we don't think they'll have a problem because it is a soft freeze. But if for some reason they do have a problem where one of the unions refuse to sign off on this, we can still have the non-unions go with the soft freeze and have the unions continue.
So would it be more in the nature of the 401k plan?
Yes. Yeah. More of a nature of that.
How many unions are represented?
There's only two that's affected. We have three unions in the city, but only two.
So with the police union, you're saying there are some folks in the police union that this would affect because they're not on PERS?
Correct.
And then the Newport Employees Association, which is primarily Public Works, that would be impacted. The firefighters are pretty much all PERS, so that won't be
they're
impacting them.
They're all PERS, right.
Okay, so at this that's time. Kind of how that's going to play out.
When you get to the stage of considering how you want to do that, we have a 401k platform that we'd love the opportunity to talk to you about. And basically what it does is it incorporates all of our managed models like you're in now, but the employee gets to choose which model he's going to be in. He can be more aggressive, he can be moderate, he can be conservative, he can be strictly balanced. So we would appreciate the opportunity to participate in that one.
And we can provide a turnkey solution, so we could be your administrator as well for that. Mm-hmm. And your employees would have online access.
Yeah. Okay, that's great news.
I didn't realize until today that West Coast Trust pays out the checks, is that correct?
Yes.
I don't know why I didn't know that. I always thought that was announced, but
they come out of a little cubby hole in Salem.
Okay. One person, and there's a little teeny man in there. There's right. A woman that's
yeah. I was going to say
her. Runs the entire organization. Okay.
So
sounds good.
Do you have any questions?
So will the defined contribution be on a percentage of contribution basis by the employees, or will it be just contribution from the city?
And well, right now where they're talking between the 9% and 10%, that will be contribution for the city putting in. Right now they put 6% right. in plus the defined benefits.
So
they're trying to make
questions.
It a little richer. They're trying to make it a little richer. I don't think they have all the answers, all the answers to all the questions yet. But we wanted to let you know that it was moving this direction.
Well, we've had several discussions about yes. that and about what's going on out there, industry-wide and public versus private or government and that. So.
Yeah.
I do have one question. Is the resolution the council will be looking at its Tuesday meeting, Monday's a holiday, will that actually have a lot of details, or will that just be a general framework of moving to a soft freeze? Or will there be some actual specific numbers in there? In which case, when the council packet's posted, Tim, it's Friday, and then you can actually log into the city website and you would see the resolution the council is going to be considering on Tuesday. So I don't know what it's going to look like because I have to wait till Friday as well.
Yeah, I believe looking at the email that I was sent this morning, that it will simply be stating that they're planning on doing this, implementing a soft freeze. I know part of this, they're going to have to notify all the employees that's involved in the benefit plan and let them know that a soft freeze is being...
With details to be worked out later.
Long right.
Okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gives you an idea of what's going to be on.
Yeah. Yeah. So probably next meeting we can update you more on what's going on.
This is just a little thing about coordination that came from the last thing, and it was that on the list that you passed down here, you know, some of those people, and I'm kind of in the middle of this with some mail that I'm getting lately, but that have they died? Are they still around? Are they rooking us for 1 year's non-notification? And how are you going to coordinate that again? I wasn't sure I heard.
We don't really have the ability to do that.
Your administrator is the standard for your DB plan, so they're more than likely at least providing an annual mortality audit. I'm just providing this to you as sort of a, it's not our role to do that,
right,
but it's also something that is a great tool for you to be checking it more frequently than annually.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of reminds me what David Marshall does for us on the council. We have our yearly budget process, but every other meeting he provides us updates as to what each of the funds are doing, how much appropriations have been used, and it just gives us a snapshot of what we probably will expect at the end of the year, but it gives us updates so we don't have to wait until the end of the year. It's really helpful.
We've got to do that with how many people are going to retire and do we have the funds to cover it.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this idea about taking a look at that list and...
Right, auditing that during the year.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a good idea.
I mean, some of the people, of course, I know and run into at the grocery store, but But yeah, some has moved away or have.
And that Social Security site, we've had to use that before.
Yes.
You can check to see what's been reported.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I can set, I've already set it up quarterly for a tickler to just generate the report, so I can email it to you like I did yesterday. Good.
Okay. What was that issue in Lincoln City? That was a year before they found out? But that one?
It was about 7 or 8 months we had paid out.
Was it an oversight or was it an intentional thing?
No, it was intentional.
Yeah. Last minute.
Can you go back after the people?
The recourse? Well,
they don't have anything.
Well, it's getting blood out of a turnip sometimes.
Yeah. You can, but it's already, you know,
So what we haven't done is talked about liquidity and where we're at and what's needed. John's got 4 minutes before he has to get on to...
I think last meeting we had three possible retirees, one pretty good sum.
Right, and so I haven't gotten any information on where we're at.
And that person actually retired as of January 1st. We paid her out. Right now, I have two employees that's kind of talked to me about the end of the year, but that's all I have.
And long-term employees with...
Okay. Well, we have $192,000 in the money market account and right at $900,000 in benchmarks.
For some reason, I thought we had one that was around $200,000 that was thinking about retiring. But
well, we had one, what was it? She was?
Yeah, we paid out $97,000 in January.
Yeah, I heard that figure.
But it
that's
was
very
it
top was, there.
Yeah.
The DC, the money purchase plan, is the first one listed on the first page. So that January payout was the most recent.
And what Tim used to do for us before the meetings was just give us a, so email us, kind of, a, and you can do it through Linda, is where we are in liquidity, what we expect, just to see, because we try to make that decision every you didn't know. I mean, I'm not saying you should have done that. I'm just saying for us it helps keep track of that, where we're at liquidity-wise for this year. And then Linda can add what the
anticipated
funds going into that from the council are, and then where we're at and which withdrawals that we anticipate, so we know. Because sometimes we'll just take the renewing the zero coupon bonds and go out with them, and sometimes we'll hold them because there's withdrawals coming. And so that's what we try to decide here at the end of the meeting is just
we're a lot more liquid than we originally exchange traded funds instead of
convertible bonds. But not on all of them. We still have some zero coupon bonds. We just one left.
Okay.
All right. So maybe that makes it less important with those EFT funds. But we just like to keep an eye on that as to what's going on and where we're at.
And Rick, you said we were at 192.
In cash.
Is that in cash?
192 in cash.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.